Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Watching the clip from the game last night where a Spurs player was trying to grab the ball from... It had gotten wedged underneath the first row seats, and he was pulling it out, and it hit the woman's beer.
Yeah. He, like, tapped it up. He, like, reached under the chair and tried to tap it up to himself.
So the ball hit a beer, and it
knocked it out of her hands.
But then she gave this look at him like he had intentionally dumped beer on her or something.
Yeah, back up and let him get the ball.
It was the worst, like, resting bitch face I'd ever seen on a human being. Like, of a rich, like, somebody, a wealthy person sitting in the second row who's just like... Oh. How dare you do this to me?
Yeah.
Somebody paid good money for these seats. Yeah.
And this beer.
Yeah.
Did you see they went back to her like 5 minutes later and she was still angry?
She's still angry?
Yeah, it looked like it.
Well, why didn't she move her beer? It was her fault.
Yeah.
I don't have to blame the victim, but she's not a victim. Her beer, that was her beer or the person next to her. She's mad at the basketball.
Seth Payne, spillage victim shamer.
Yeah. What the hell? Why was she still angry?
Did you see how the ball wound up in the... Did you see the pass that sent the ball into the stands?
Yeah, Westbrook...
that was the first beer that it hit. It hit somebody else's beer, and that went flying.
Yeah.
So it was awfully wet. That was a drop zone right there.
This woman's petitioning the NBA now to put a hockey-style glass up around the arena.
Netting.
I shan't have to commingle with these athletes.
God, you joke. You joke, but you know that, like, sometime in the next few years, someone's going to get hurt at courtside of an NBA game because a player falls into them, and there will be people that want some sort of buffer between courtside seats and the floor. You know it's happening.
You know, at least people are smart enough not to have an infant up there and they're sitting in their...
I think you give people a lot of credit.
I've never noticed. To come to think of it, you don't even really see young children sitting directly courtside all that often.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous place to be.
Especially because they're on their phones so much.
Yeah, I know.
You got to have your head on a swivel. I screwed Amy over one time. We were sitting... We have a friend who has seats. These are not Wallace's seats that you and I sat in the other night. We have another friend who has seats right over by the Rockets bench. He's had them for a long time. Literally on the front row next to the Rockets bench. So you're sort of facing... You're on the baseline facing the court, and the Rockets bench is kind of perpendicular to you.
Yeah.
So we were over there. This is back in the Kevin Martin days. This is like pre-James Harden. So we were sitting in those seats over there, and this is right after Amy and I first started dating. And we're at the game, and I'm showing her something on my phone. She's got her head down looking at my phone, and I think it was Kevin Martin, like, whips a chest pass to somebody, and it sails past the player, and it hits Amy right in the head.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
You just, what were you doing?
I was showing her something on my phone. Yeah. I was probably on Twitter or something like that, yeah.
And did they catch it on camera?
I don't know. I was at the point in the relationship where I sure was hoping not.
To go back through the archives and find that and get it out there.
Yeah. I forget who they were playing. I don't remember the date, but yeah, it was... So, kids, if you're listening, keep the head on the swivel, baby. Keep the head on the swivel.
Also, if you know the person that had the beer dumped on her last night and she was acting like the worst crime had ever been committed, let us know.
713-572-4610. All right, you can text or call. Seth, the first I saw this story yesterday was you going back and forth with Troy from Texans Cap about this. And the only tweet I saw at first was your reply. And you were taken aback by the percentages I'm about to talk about with respect to this NFL story, and said, we're going to talk about this tomorrow. There's a Dan Graziano story on ESPN.com about an arbitration grievance filed against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Relevant to you because you used to play for the Jags, not under this ownership or this management team, but you played for Tom Coughlin, who appears to be the bad guy in all of this. Mm. Apparently, the Jacksonville Jaguars have been trying to force players to come in during their downtime where they, by the rules of the CBA, they're not obligated to do so.
So doing rehab in the offseason, they were requiring players to be present at the facility, which I would tell guys is it's a good idea to be there, but the rights under the CBA are that they can't, the team can't force you to be there.
And they certainly can't fine you.
No, and they can't fine you.
Which the Jags fined poor Dante Fowler into oblivion.
And apparently $700,000 in fines to Dante Fowler for missing appointments at the team's facility in the offseason. This is where I'm torn, because it is true. Like, Coughlin has this way of feeling like, hey, this is how it should be, so I'm going to just proceed like it is without really he's a bit of a scofflaw. He doesn't think it should be this way, so he's just going to act like, well, no, I'm going to force you to be here. Problem is, Dante Fowler, a kid who obviously should have been there, because Dante Fowler has maturity issues, but it's his right to not do his rehab in the off season at the facility. They just went ahead and fined him and took the money out of his paycheck, I'm presuming. And
hold up, $700,000.
So Dante Fowler, like, I'll credit Dante Fowler and probably more so his agent for understanding that he should file a grievance for that. And this was probably pretty clear cut and dry. Now, the tweet that the NFLPA put out, the statement that the NFLPA put out, is one that should be exciting for Texans fans. It's
I like this angle.
This is from the NFLPA, you know, just kind of explaining the situation. And it says, it should be noted that Jaguars players continue to be at odds with Jaguars management over their rights under the CBA far more than players on other clubs. In the last 2 years, more than 25% of the grievances filed in the entire league have been filed against the Jaguars.
Okay, that's
25% of all grievances. In a league of 32 teams, one out of four grievances goes to the against the Jaguars. That's eight times as many as you would expect.
Well, and just common sense would tell you, when you read that and you're a player, right?
Yeah.
And you're going to be hitting free agency someday. Like, practically every player hits free agency at some point, whether it's because they're good and they get to the end of a contract or because they get cut. Just common sense says this is going to factor into my decision whether or not to go there. But I love how the statement that you're reading actually recommends that players don't sign there.
They don't say that, but they say you as players may want to consider this when you have a chance to select your next club. I can't ever remember the NFL coming out that hard.
Opining.
But passive aggressively too. Like, I don't know, just something you might want to think about, you know, if you're,
That's not Southern Bell. You know what that is? That's OJ on Twitter. I'm just saying. Hey, Twitter world. They should have started off that statement with, hey, Twitter world, it's me, yours truly. The Jacksonville Jaguars have had 25% of the grievances in the league filed against them. If you're thinking about signing somewhere, I would think twice about Jacksonville. I'm just saying.
They should have. I'm just saying, hey, that's just me. Hey, right. Hey, maybe you don't like money.
Maybe it's me.
I like money. I like to keep it in my pocket, right. But that's just me.
Right.
So, yeah, and obviously there's a reason Jalen Ramsey isn't with the Jaguars anymore, and it's because he didn't get along with Tom Coughlin. Reportedly, it was his meeting with Tom Coughlin that really sent him over the edge. And it's easy to blame Jalen Ramsey for a lot of stuff because he's a big personality and whatnot, and he was stuck in a small market for a guy that wants to be a star. But there is that about Coughlin where he just can't help himself. He's old school, but there are a lot of old school coaches in the NFL. Bill O'Brien's an old school guy, and one of the deals that comes with coaching in professional sports is that you got to understand the players have a certain amount of leverage, and you gotta play by the rules. And this is a lesson in Coughlin. You know, going back to when we played there, there'd be grievances, and guys win, and then, boy, it's almost like you... I don't want to make light of this, but like in other situations in life where you want to report a crime or report abuse, but you're kind of afraid of retribution.
Sure.
It's a little bit like that, where almost you could sense it in Coughlin when somebody would file a grievance, like how he would take it out on the team, either with his mood, or you'd feel like sometimes you'd almost feel like practices were harder because somebody had filed a grievance about something.
I would think if you're a fringe player, you'd be worried about getting blackballed if you filed a grievance on the wrong person.
Oh, well, that's where it definitely, I mean, it's the players like Dante Fowler that Coughlin feels. He probably almost feels like the ends justifies the means, and he has a moral imperative to help Dante Fowler out, but he starts doing things that are just flat out against the rules. Yeah. So the union rep is going to say, like, look, you can't do this. We got a CBA. I'm the union rep. I got to stand up for these guys, especially if it's to the tune of $700,000.
Okay, so 25% of the grievances filed over the last 2 years have been filed against the Jags. My first question becomes, Seth, is somebody who's not in football, someone who's never been a player, been part of a union, how often are grievances filed against teams? Like, is it something where are there 200 of them a year, or are there 10 of them a year?
It's about 1/8 as often as it is with the Jaguars. That's all I can tell you. Okay. I don't know. You know, usually what will happen is, you know, Mark Bruner was the player rep here for a long time. Obviously, Eric Winston was for a good chunk of time, too. Mm-hmm. And usually what will happen is a player, if he has an issue or he thinks, he goes and talks to the union rep, and then the NFLPA rep handles it. I was never – it's not like they give you the stats on who's filing a grievance or whatnot. It was really interesting with Bruner, because Bruner himself was like an old-school guy. He was an awesome guy, and coaches loved him and everything, but he was also the NFLPA rep.
Sure.
But that's where – I mean, there was at least one instance I remember where Kubiak kind of tried to play the hard guy on Bruner, and – Bruner pushed back hard because that was his role as a player up for sticking up for guys.
Yeah, I get the reason I ask, if it's 100 grievances are filed a year, then that's just purely quantitatively. I'm like, wow, that means overall. Okay, I'm trying to get at the heart of this 25% thing.
I don't
think the Jags
grievances aren't filed all that often.
Okay.
Usually it's when something, because most coaches know that they got to follow certain rules and everything. And usually what had happened, too, is if a coach does something, the player's rep will go talk to him and say, hey, coach, you know, we're not supposed to be doing this. A lot of times, I think when it happened with Dom, I think Dom might have had a couple of, like, just genuinely honest mistakes a couple times.
Yeah.
Dom was always really conscious of it. Like, in Dom, another guy who's an old-school guy, but he was also a by-the-book guy, you know.
Yeah.
Dom, you think about it, like, the way he walks and his posture and everything, Dom Capers is a by-the-book type of guy.
Yeah.
He was always very careful. He had everything parsed down to the minute to be sure he wasn't violating the rules. So if something happened and the player's rep went to Dom, it was taken care of like that. There was no need for a grievance.
Gotcha.
Sometimes with practices, like the Ravens have been busted for this a bunch of times.
Yeah.
They're doing stuff in practice that you're not supposed to be able to. You're not doing. Usually, there's already been a communication about it.
Texans got busted a few years back, and I think 10 years ago, but under Kubiak, yeah, there was some film of them doing contact stuff when they weren't supposed to at a certain time of year.
Yeah.
I think it was right after you retired. But I'm just trying to figure out, is it 25% of 12 grievances that have been filed around the league, or is it 25% of 100? Because if it's 25% of 100, that means there's a couple dozen guys on the Jags that have had an issue over the last couple years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it's two or three guys, if it's a smaller sample, then I'm not as inclined to say, boy, this is a really bad organization. You know what I mean?
I would bet. I mean, I can't. I don't know how to put a number on it. It's more than a couple.
I'm just curious.
It's way more than a couple.
Yeah. Did you ever file a grievance?
No.
Okay.
No.
You were cool.
I do what I always do. Once a year or so, I flip out on somebody, and that keeps everybody honest around you.
That's good.
Just keep them on tiptoes just enough.
Yeah.
It was like, Seth's an awesome guy, but watch out.
But today could be the day. Today could be the day. Like the movie Ransom.
Yeah.
Hey, today could be Jimmy Shaker Day.
Oh, let me tell you something. Yeah.
The Pro Bowl voting totals were released. The leaders were released yesterday, Seth, and it's good to see that fans that vote for these things still know what's up at the wide receiver position. DeAndre Hopkins was the leading vote getter in the AFC among wide receivers. I was thinking about this yesterday as I was looking at that. Like, Hopkins hasn't had a great season statistically. He's been really good. He's got almost 100 catches again, but he hasn't been as explosive for most of the year as he's normally been. And so I started thinking, I'm like, okay, this is good that he still has the star power. He's still doing enough on the field to get the popular vote like this. And then I started thinking about the wide receiver position in the AFC.
It's been a down year.
In the AFC.
Yeah, in the AFC.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, because if you look at the leading receivers, and you have Michael Thomas, obviously, number one, and then you've got DeAndre Hopkins, number two. This is just simply in numbers of reception. But then you go on down. Well, Edelman is out there, too.
Yeah.
He doesn't count.
Yeah. No, but the guys who have been in the same conversation with Hopkins the last couple of years, they're all either injured or they're Antonio Brown, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're all either injured or they're insane. But Antonio Brown's not even in football. AJ Green's been hurt all year. Tyreek Hill's been banged up. T.Y. Hilton, we watched him last night. He's been banged up. Like the wide receiver position in the AFC, it shouldn't come as a great surprise, I guess, that Hopkins is the man still.
It lacks
in the
a
AFC.
Certain level of electricity.
Yes.
Odell Beckham Jr. is he's browned. He's been browned.
He's been browned.
Yeah, and part of it is his own doing. I feel like he's getting a pass for some of his bad play just because it's not nearly all his fault. It's more of the offense, the miscommunications. It's Baker Mayfield a few times a game just throwing it to green grass to the point where it's obviously a miscue. So I don't know if that's Baker Mayfield's fault or Odell Beckham Jr.'s fault, but Odell's had drops. It's a weird year in the AFC.
You asked a really interesting question during the break. They were showing a bunch of the Browns lowlights on TV in here, and you posed the question, if you were Lincoln Riley, would you rather go to the Browns or the Cowboys?
And the only reason I was even considering the Browns was because of Baker Mayfield,
yeah,
obviously, and
the relationship. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it's not like, but you've got a much more proven quarterback in Dak Prescott in Dallas. So I think Lincoln Riley could forego his personal relationship and say, okay, I'm going to take the guy who's still one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL this season, despite his team's record, and the Dallas Cowboys organization geographically. Everything just makes sense that he would take Cowboys.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting here trying to think of who the hell the Browns are going to hire if they fire Freddie Kitchens, because they might be back in this mode where, remember a few years ago when they had to take like their fifth choice?
Yeah.
Because everybody kept turning down the Browns?
Yeah.
That's about what it looks like right now.
Yeah, they finally have a talented roster, but nobody wants to be there. Did you see there were rumors that they were, I know Odell was doing it a couple weeks ago. There were rumors that there were even more guys on the Browns that were doing it this past week to the Arizona sideline of all places. It's not like they were yelling at the 49ers or the Saints or the Packers like a good team. They're yelling at the Cardinals sideline, come get me.
But they're also looking at Kyler Murray. They might have been talking to Kyler Murray individually.
Mm.
And they're thinking, wow, look at what this kid could be. Because Kyler Murray's shown that offense has shown some signs of growth and fits and starts. But think about what Kyler Murray could be with any those guys' minds on the Browns. Hey, I'm trapped here on this. Yeah, I'm the answer.
Yeah.
I need to be. I'm being. My talents are not being appreciated.
Plus, at least if you're going to play for a rookie head coach who is brought in basically just because he has some offensive chops, I'd rather go play for Cliff Kingsbury. He seems cooler than Freddie Kitchens.
Seems like, yeah, I feel like Cliff Kingsbury, he probably wears Yeezys. You know he can dance. He's younger. He's better looking. And they're looking at Freddie Kitchens. They're like, this guy? This is my guy?
Right. Like if you go out with Cliff Kingsbury, you could theoretically siphon off the waffle runoff, the fourth or fifth best looking chicks hanging out with Cliff Kingsbury is better than anything that Freddie Kitchens is
hanging
out with.
Yeah,
Kitchens might be married for all
stark difference.
I have no
plus
idea.
It's in Arizona. These guys are getting to a lot of those guys. If you're from the South and all of a sudden you're in your first December in Cleveland, and then all of a sudden you go, was that game in Arizona? And you're out in Arizona.
Was.
They
got to
be thinking, like, oh, please.
This is
please
nice.
Come rescue me.
Yeah.
They're looking up in the stands, and there's fit, non-depressed women up in the stands.
Yeah.
As opposed to Cleveland, where everybody by now, like, women are on their second pack of cigarettes by the time it's 8 a.m.
The lake is on fire.
Yeah.
So DeAndre Hopkins looks like he's going to be going to the Pro Bowl. I was thinking about this yesterday. How many Pro Bowlers do you think the Texans wind up getting in?
Well, let's see.
For a team that's 9-5, it's tough to come up with a bunch of guys.
It's hard. It's Zach Cunningham, it's interesting. Inside linebacker can be a little bit of a wild card when there's not a clear-cut Luke Kuechly type or something.
Yeah. McKinney made it last year.
Right, right. So, and it's also dicey because the defense has not been a good defense.
Right.
So, usually on defense, it's a lot harder to make it in one of the non-marquee positions if you, and that's what I'm thinking about, like DJ Reader. DJ Reader's been playing very well this year, but it's not a good defense. And it's hard for guys don't have a lot of sack production or anything. Usually the thing that'll get you respect and form going to the Pro Bowl is, hey, they're the number one run defense or something like that. So it might be tough for him. I don't think any of the outside linebackers. I think Zach Cunningham, I think, has caught a lot of people's, like, players and coaches' attention. So Cunningham might be the guy.
He's far and away leading the league in tackles. And
yeah.
I know tackles is a kind of a, it's a bit of a wonky stat, but
yeah.
With Zach Cunningham, look, you're supposed to be getting tackles in this defense as an inside linebacker. But I think that if you believe that number represents some degree of activity above and beyond the average inside linebacker, it matches up the eye test with Cunningham.
Well, his when you look at, there's a stops stat, which is a little bit more
impact.
Those are higher impact tackles. He's very, very high in the league in those. So when
he's
it comes
leading
to,
the league coming into this league week.
Stop. Yeah. So he's making plays at the line of scrimmage. Like if it's first and 10, and you tackle a running back for 2 yards, that's a stop because you're putting him, the offense into it. Versus a lot of guys, sometimes the guys that lead the league in tackles, it's like, okay, a lot of them are for a 5 yard gain.
Yeah.
Cunningham's making influential tackles, and I think people notice that. You know, teams notice that. So he might be a guy that makes his first appearance this year. That'd be awesome.
Do you think Deshaun makes it?
He's quarterbacks. Well, they send like 8 of them.
Well, no, I'm talking about, will he be one of the 3 that gets picked before everybody starts bailing out of the Pro Bowl?
What's going to happen with Brady? Does Brady make it?
I don't think so. I don't think he makes it.
I know he shouldn't, like, just based on performance, but you know how that goes.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Lamar Jackson's the leading vote getter among all players. So he's in.
So among the top 2?
It's 3 that go.
3 go as not, quote unquote starters or whatever they, yeah.
Yeah, okay. three go. There's a starter and then there's 2 reserve quarterbacks.
Okay, so
they pick 3.
The interesting question is Mahomes or Deshaun Watson, and how do people view Deshaun compared to Mahomes this year? That's what I don't know. Because Mahomes, it's been somewhat of a down year. I say down year compared to last year, obviously. I think that Deshaun gets more respect for. Or people acknowledge that he has, I would say, a less talented roster around him, except that he does have DeAndre Hopkins, obviously. That's a dicey one. But I think if we're talking top 3, yes, he makes it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Jackson, Mahomes, and Watson. Mm-hmm. I think those are the 3 that are going to make it. I don't think Brady gets picked this year. It's partially fan vote, but it's also, I think players are voting as well. I think players and coaches are involved in the whole thing as well. I don't know what the exact
formula
is.
It's a third fan, a third coach, is a third player.
Okay. I don't think Brady makes it this year. I think the clear 3 best quarterbacks in the AFC are those 3 guys. And guess what? Guess what the combined record is of those 3 quarterbacks against Tom Brady this year? 3-0.
You know who
those quarterbacks have all beaten Tom Brady.
By QBR, do you know who the 4th highest rated quarterback in the AFC is? Ryan
Tannehill.
Fitzpatrick.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was going to say Ryan Tannehill.
No, Tannehill's. It goes here. It goes here's the AFC by QBR, which is better than quarterback than passer rating.
Yeah, yeah.
These are all imperfect, but you have. Oh, I'm sorry. He would be fifth because you have Lamar Jackson.
Yep.
Patrick Mahomes 2nd. Then you have Deshaun Watson 3rd.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Then Ryan Tannehill 4th.
Okay.
Then. In the AFC, Derek Carr would be 5th.
Okay.
And Tannehill would be 6th.
Fitzy, you mean?
No, Tannehill is 6th.
Oh, you just said Tannehill.
Fitzpatrick is 4th.
Oh, okay. You just said Tannehill was 4th. Sorry.
Son of a bitch. Yeah. Sorry.
All right. It's okay. It's all right.
Stop talking this morning. Just do the show solo. It's been a rough one for me. That's like my 9th. I've had more mental errors this morning than Jacksonville has grievances filed by the NFLPA. Yeah, I know. I'm Laramie.
Damn.
I've got tonsillitis.
Seth's having a tonsil day. Do you think tonsil makes it?
As a quarterback? Probably not.
No.
Let's see. No, I don't think he makes it.
I think
Orlando Brown's the leading vote getter amongst the AFC.
Is he?
Yeah.
Texans took Martinez Rankin.
I'm fan. Those are fan votes. Hey, Marty. Oh, that's a debate that needs to be had, by the way.
What?
This is Aaron Reese wrote something about how what a great trade Carlos Hyde for Martinez Rankin was. He got a lot of pushback from Chiefs fans. Who said, hey, Martinez Rankin started 5 or 6 games for us this year before he got injured. Martinez Rankin let up far fewer pressures per game started this year with the Chiefs than he did last year, which becomes a whole interesting discussion. If Martinez Rankin comes back healthy next year and starts for the Chiefs and has a good season, we're right back where we started with, like, all right, wait a second. What are the coaches doing for the offensive lineman here? Why is Martinez Rankin actually a viable offensive lineman for the Chiefs?
I think the biggest thing with Rankin when he was here, as long as we're bringing him up, is that he was Chantrell Henderson got hurt, so he got thrown out there at left tackle in week 1 without having had a training camp. he just got thrown in the grease.
We probably, and I wonder too, you know, I can't remember during training camp, had he gone through the typical indoctrination process on the Texans where offensive linemen play all 5 positions?
I don't know.
Plus fake tight end, plus maybe H-back every
slot
now and then.
Slot receiver.
Yeah. We're going to line him up as a dummy slot.
Versatility is key, guys.
But But we want you to be, you know, just in case, learn the entire route tree.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I bet they have, they probably got these guys ranked by their ability to run routes on a, if they line up as a tight end in a six offensive line, in a six offensive line package, can they actually run routes?
Oh, that is great.
The free agency money for Clowney is going to be super, super interesting.
Well, the one unfortunate thing that's happened for Clowney, the one thing I thought became a bit of a myth at the end with the Texans
injuries.
People were like, well, they don't want to pay him because he's injury prone. It's like, he's been one of their, the last three seasons he was with the Texans, he was one of the most durable players they had. He was one of the few star players other than Hopkins that was able to, and not even star player, but even just better than average to very, very good.
Yeah.
That was able to answer the bell most weeks. Unfortunately for Clowney, not only are you having to kind of justify paying him by going, well, if you watch, you see that he draws all this attention. Don't look at the box score, look at the film. But he's also dealing with a core injury now, which is a big concern. He's having to manage that. So all of a sudden, the injury narrative is actually injected itself back into this in a truthful kind of way, as opposed to just sort of a kind of a narrative kind of way.
It'll be. So the Texans reportedly, they offered him a relatively competitive contract. It was above Trey Flowers. It was below what DeMarcus...
It was in like that DeMarcus Lawrence, Frank Clark range.
Yeah,
I think.
And it sounded, from McLean's story, and we'll talk to McLean about this tomorrow, it sounded like it was a little bit lower than DeMarcus Lawrence.
Might
perhaps.
Have been, yeah.
Who knows? But it'll be interesting to see if Clowney gets more than that. And if, you know, ultimately, who knows what... I don't know. Did the Texans really, really want him to re-sign, or did they give him an offer where they figured, okay, we got to make it look like we want to re-sign him because the CBA doesn't allow you to just tag a guy specifically to trade him. You got to at least make it look like you're trying to sign him, and then they were going to get rid of him anyway.
Yeah.
Who knows?
And also to be able to tell your fans, hey, we made a competitive offer.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
We made a competitive offer.
Yeah.
And I, you know, look, if Clowney was looking for top of market money, I don't want to turn this into a whole Clowney thing. I just thought it was
interesting. I think we need to talk about it for the next three segments.
To answer your question,
Rockets
Texter.
Rockets historic comeback be damned.
Yeah, we'll get to that in headlines here in just a second. One area, you and I don't get to dig into all the facets of the game on Monday, Seth, because we're only on for a couple of hours. So
the man comes in.
The man comes in and
by
says.
By the man, I mean Mark Vandermeer.
That's right. They come in and they give the old tap on the left arm like the manager does. And they say, give us the ball.
Yeah.
We're handing the ball to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris. So we don't get to talk about everything. So some things get put on the back burner till today. One thing that we didn't get to yesterday, but in going back, I rewatched the game yesterday. The Texans had a really, really, maybe their best day, but they had a really, really good day on special teams on Sunday against the Titans. In all facets, Kaimi Fairbairn was perfect. Brian Anger's been awesome for this team this year. He's been really, really good punting the football. Their coverage was really, really good. DeAndre Carter had his longest kick return of the year. He returned a kick out to the 35 or 40 yard line.
They
blocked a field goal.
Did he not do that right as I think I had just said beforehand, I've gotten so sick of watching kickoff returns in the modern NFL because they so rarely
turn into anything.
I was like,
I heard you.
It's another wasted. Just come on, let's just get it over already. Stick it on the 25. Then Carter went off. So now I have to do that every time.
Yep. But special teams was really good. And the Texans are going to be playing games here in January where eventually they're going to be playing teams that are more talented than they are, and they're going to need to be close to perfect on special teams, if not make some changing plays on special teams to win these games.
I guess Brad Seeley is like the sneaky should be the assistant coach of the year award guy, cuz he's taken what's been a multiple years problem for the Texans and completely flipped it around. In conjunction with Brian Gaine, too. I would say Brian Gaine and Brad Seeley together, and now Bill O'Brien, they put a different emphasis and focus on special teams.
I would love to know if Brad Seeley came in, because I would love to know if he came in and what he said about what needed to happen with special teams when he got here. Look, Brad Seeley was a really respected special teams coach before he got here. He still is, obviously. But I wonder, my guess is Brad Seeley, there were probably other places he could have gone to coach special teams. I wonder if he came in like these consultants and did an audit of the special teams first. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to come here and coach the special teams, but I'm going to look at the film and I'm going to look at the guys we have on special teams. And I'm going to say, here are the things that we need to do. And I say that because it does seem like with Brian Gain and now still with Bill O'Brien heading up the flat organizational structure, that there's far more of an emphasis on bringing in guys whose specific roles are just special teams. They didn't do that before. For the first few years that O'Brien was here, they would just use guys who were at the bottom of the depth chart at their positions and then try to tell us how valuable they were on special teams.
Yeah, well, Alfred Blue.
Yes. Like, I mean, well, like, look, it should have been a trophy for Alfred Blue.
I know he's not quite what you want as a running back, but he's also the same thing on special teams.
Right.
So he can do both.
He is decidedly below average at many, many things.
I think that I've talked to special teams coaches before in the NFL who I don't know if this bears out statistically, but the feeling among some special teams coaches is that offensive-minded head coaches tend not to care as much about special teams for whatever reason. You know, Kubiak, I felt like he almost actively avoided special teams almost. He hated it so much. Defensive coaches, maybe at least partially just because, look, on special teams, you want guys that can block. You got guys that can run in space and make open field tackles and everything. Defensive coaches tend to maybe care a little bit more about special teams. So I think for O'Brien, he fought that and recognized it and understood that whatever his natural inclination might be, that they had to fix special teams. It was just a glaring eyesore on the Texans for forever. Brad Seeley, too, by the way, maybe is he the best expatriate that they've brought in?
Ooh, player or coach?
I guess Crennel has obviously been here the longest, and I think that
he's the one whose unit has consistently performed at the
highest level. Right, yeah, top five level.
Because they were top five, certainly easily top 10, if not top five last year. And I'm looking at Football Outsiders now. They were seventh as of a few days ago in special teams.
They don't have as many former Patriots as you would think on their coaching staff, given the fact that it seems like every single year they're trying to grab one. Seeley might be the most notable, though.
Yeah, to me, the biggest thing on special teams is they don't get nearly as many penalties as they used to. I feel like Eddie Pleasant had one penalty every single game when he was on special teams with the Texans back in the day.
Yeah.
They're just more disciplined. They're a real idea. They're seventh on special teams right now.
Somebody asked if we've talked about the Scarlet hit and flag yet. We talked about it briefly yesterday.
A little bit. Let's touch on it.
Well, look, it was a bad call. It was a bad call that would get called again. I think that's just what we've seen this so many times now, where you get penalized for a big hit if it looks like you might have hit him in the head and it's an awesome hit, it seems like it's going to get flagged. That's why it was so crazy that Kareem Jackson's definitely illegal hit on DeAndre Hopkins wasn't flagged, because that was out in the wide open and it looked like a classic illegal hit and they didn't call it. Scarlett's hit was legal. I think that the only thing I could say is I would say you got to start coaching guys just to do like in rugby, go lower, wrap up completely. You know, in rugby, there's a rule. You have to try to wrap. And if you don't, that's a red card. Yeah, that's how they keep from when you're not wearing pads and helmets. That's one of the things they do to keep it safe. You have to attempt to wrap up. If you don't, it's reckless. I don't want to start coaching that way, because look at the biggest play in that game was Justin Reed. Justin Reed threw his injured shoulder into a player and coughed the ball up. You know, if circumstances are a little different, if the receiver is a little lower, maybe that's a flaggable penalty. But you don't want to remove the hitting from the game, even if they're flagging it unfairly.
I don't want to add things to review, because I hated when they added pass interference to review. But just in watching that Scarlett thing, I'm like, they should be able to review this. Like, this should be a challengeable thing. Like, that would have been a logical place for Bill O'Brien to challenge that play right there, because it would have been 3rd and 7 on a drive that the Titans were moving the ball. They were deep in Texans territory. Instead, they have 1st and goal. And they wind up scoring a few plays later.
I think the reason that they might be hesitant to make that reviewable is that what it would end up doing is, I think there would be a lot more actual calls. No. Mm. Well, let's see. So if a player, it would be the kind of thing, could you challenge the penalty? Yeah, you'd have to make it where you could challenge the penalty, but you couldn't challenge it like they are doing it with interference and say to call the hit.
You can't challenge a not targeting call. You can only challenge a targeting call.
Yeah, because they're letting it slide quite a bit. Yeah, there's a play in that game where a running back lowered his head and hit one of our guys.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, the Zach Cunningham one. The,
right.
The running back lowered his head.
He did.
Was it Derrick Henry?
Yeah. Yeah. Remember a few years ago they said they were going to start calling that?
Yeah, they called it twice.
In the preseason, they're like, yeah, this is bad. We're not going to do this anymore. All right, let's do some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
My confidence is never gone. Like, no matter if I go over 20 or whatever. Like, I'm always shoot the basketball and be aggressive. And earlier they weren't falling, you know, and then I made a couple shots to cut the lead down. And then other guys tonight stepped up. You know, Russell obviously was key. He was aggressive the entire night. But Ben made some big shots. PJ, Clint did an unbelievable job on both ends of the floor. So it was a you know, team effort tonight.
The Rockets averted another disaster last night. They were down by 25 in the first half, Seth, to the San Antonio Spurs. They were down by 19 at the half. Harden referred to it right there. He was 4 for 17 in the first half of this basketball game. But he hit a couple shots down the stretch in the first half that got the lead down to a more manageable 18 points as opposed to being in the mid-20s somewhere. And the Rockets steadily chipped into that lead on the Spurs until the latter minutes of the game, ultimately taking the lead at 99-97. Harden gets a dunk, 101-97. They go on to win 109-107.
Russell Westbrook is starting to feel a whole lot more comfortable, and I would imagine at least part of it is because he had offseason knee surgery. Maybe that's feeling better, but also just his role on the team, when to be assertive, and all of that, I think he's starting to figure it out. In the last five games, he's averaging 27 points on 53.1% shooting. The biggest thing, so that's the positive. The negative is, look, we know this. This team is not going to reach their potential if they continue to be so haphazard in their effort.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. Just go out and look like you give a damn consistently, unlike you did in the first. Because Harden was just cold as hell, but they also just did not care at all on defense in the first half. They just gotta iron that out somehow. And again, maybe that's the typical thing we get with the Rockets, where you've had a little bit of roster churn, you've got Russell Westbrook coming in, and guys just need to get more comfortable.
Yeah, Russ has curtailed some of the outside shooting, too. He still does it from time to time. And I guess if you're open, you still take jumpers if you're Russell Westbrook. But he has stopped for the most part. He took a contested bank shot towards the end of the game last night that was a head-scratcher. But his shot selection has gotten much, much better as well. Monday Night Football last night, the New Orleans Saints hammer the Indianapolis Colts, putting the Colts season on life support. Man, Seth, it felt like it was just a couple of weeks ago that the Colts were leading the AFC South.
It was.
And now here they are at 6-8 and getting ready to head to Cabo somewhere.
Feels like Jacoby Brissett has turned into a pumpkin.
Yes.
Yeah. He was just wildly inaccurate, almost to the point where it seemed like he must have an injury or something that was undisclosed. I don't know. And then on the opposite side of the ball, obviously, Drew Brees sets the touchdown record twice in one game.
Yeah.
Because there was a bogus offensive pass interference call on Tre'Quan Smith in the first half where he would have gotten the record. They called that one back, and then he went ahead in the second half and went ahead of Peyton Manning for the all-time touchdown lead.
Yeah, so that was cool to see. Congratulations to Drew Brees, and now they're one of four teams in the NFC that are 11-3 right now.
The NFC playoff seeding is fascinating right now. It's really crazy, and one of the integral players in the NFC playoff seeding, if I could just jump the buzzer on this one. Josh Gordon is now there we go.
Yeah, there's the buzzer. Yeah. All right, there it is. Yeah. Headline number 3, Josh Gordon popped again.
For drugs.
We
don't know what. Now immediately, I haven't looked at social media, but I'm guessing everybody always assumes it's pot, where that's never released. You don't know if it's pot, you don't know if it's tranks, you don't know if it's LSD.
Tranks.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's just drugs that he's not supposed to be using. And he is living in a state where you can just walk into a dispensary and get it.
He is.
The marijuana.
Yeah.
Not the hallucinogens or the tranks.
The tranks.
What were they on in that Leo DiCaprio movie where they're all just barbiturates?
Oh, was it Barbs?
I don't know.
Yeah. I like to shorten them and call them tranks and barbs. It makes me feel cool. The timeline on Josh.
Cool in 1978.
The timeline on Josh Gordon's list of transgressions is really depressing to read, man. Like he was an All-Pro in 2013, a season in which he was suspended for the first two games of the year for violating the substance abuse policy. 2014, suspended for a year. 2015, suspended 16 games. 2016, suspended 4 games. And then there's more suspensions, including the one yesterday. My question with Josh Gordon all the time is, Seth, how many strikes do you get in the NFL for substance abuse? Like, is it just...
Well, I, that's the... I think it's up to the commissioner's discretion, and I think that's it's different than steroids where you're obviously trying to gain an edge. The thing with substance abuse is, like, we know.
It's addiction.
Yeah, if you're out there saying, like, well, he just needs to be mentally tougher or something, come on. We know better than that now. Right. It's a disease. It's a physical addiction. And I think the NFL genuinely recognizes that. And then from a PR standpoint, too, you want to be sure that when a guy has this disease and this problem, that you're not just completely casting him out. So they continue to give him these chances. And I don't know. Obviously, it's not working. Maybe the best thing for Josh Gordon at this point is to have to go Ryan Leaf it. You know, Ryan Leaf, I don't know if Ryan Leaf never really gained control of his issues until he was out of the NFL and out of the limelight and all that. And now he's doing extremely well.
He is. But, man, even once he was out of the limelight and out of the NFL, he still
it
had
took
more
a little while.
Bumps along the way. Yeah. I mean, he had to go to prison.
You're right about the consistency, though. 2012 was the only year Josh Gordon didn't show up to abuse something or get caught. He was there every year.
Or get caught is the problem.
He was irresponsible in 2012. He didn't get caught for a thing.
Probably the best way to put it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.